And we're back for yet another episode of Inside Bassmaster. Got a very special guest today, and he and his beloved are joining us in the Palatial Bassmaster Studios, high atop the Bassmaster Towers overlooking downtown Birmingham, the Magic City. And I've always wanted to do this, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it on radio with the speaker and everything. I want to say the Golden Ram is here. Cliff Perch with his wife, Alicia. Jim Sexton sitting across the table from me, as always. He's got Clifford's numbers, and we're going to dig into that first. So, Jim, take it away. Might as well jump right into this.
Clifford, was it this year that Dave Mercer started calling you the Golden Ram?
Yeah. It must have been probably maybe February-ish, somewhere in there, but yeah, I started to get around a little bit.
You know, it makes such good sense, and we Thomas and I have commented, and you see why I might commented on it, but guys who have great hair on the Elite Series, and I think Clifford's got to be in top five.
Yeah, top five, I would definitely say.
We got some guys with some really long hair who are getting a lot of attention for that.
It's ratty hair, though, right? I mean, yours just has this... I don't know. I'm not really ever really into talking about a dude's.
Yeah,
hair,
I know it, and I don't think Cliff is either, really. Yeah. So, but those some of the other guys, they're happy to go there and spend a lot of time on it. The other thing that's just interesting to me, I got to say that Clifford Perch has the fishiest name on the Elite Series, right?
That's probably true.
I mean, think about it. His last name is a fish.
You thought you were going to come in here and this would be serious.
Well, yeah, you know, I've got that a little bit before. You know, bass would be about the only step better probably. But, you know, part of my family background is from the Midwest and kind of north up there. So perch is probably a little bit more fitting, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. That makes great sense. Well, we're going to delve into your numbers, and I'm going to start off with your age. You're 43.
Yes, I am.
I do believe. Yep. From Payson, Arizona. And looking back, it looks like you grew up in that area, too?
Yeah. You know, I've lived in that town my whole life. You know, basically, I'm right where I was born. And you know, all the smart guys, I say, moved out here. But it's just too hard for me to give up. I love where I grew up. I love having, you know, just kind of open range, being able to go public land wherever I want, and just it's just what's home to me. So it's hard to give that up, and
that's understandable.
You know, I pay a little bit for it probably, but you know, it's a long drive home this week.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, it costs, but it's just home to me.
How many people live in Payson?
You know, I don't know really. It's more of a recreational area and tourism. So I think, you know, it's like around maybe 14,000 now, I've heard, and you know, it's probably upwards to 50 maybe in the summertime. So
okay.
It's and you know, when I say summer in Arizona, we're a little more high elevation, so you know, we get kind of those desert visitors.
What is your elevation there?
Well, we're at 5,000 where I live, but we're 30 minutes from about 8,000 and we're 30 minutes from about 2,500. So
wow.
Pretty easy to get one way or the other. If it's cold,
yeah,
you know, you can go 20 minutes one way, and if it's hot, you can go 20 minutes the other way. So it's a unique deal. You know, out
right
here, you kind of got to go like 500 miles or something to change your climate.
Yeah.
So.
Alicia, are you from that area as well?
I'm an Arizona native, but I am born and raised in Sedona, Arizona.
Okay. Wow. That's a cool
place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well-known area for resorting and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's a few other things about your family. You two have two kids. Looks like two girls.
Yeah.
Kaylee, who's 16, and Cassidy, who's 13.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Raising two girls, and. Let's jump right in on your Bassmaster tournaments. You've had many tournaments outside of Bassmaster, but you've had 74 Bassmaster tournaments. That includes five classics, and you're going to notice a trend here. He's fished the 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, and 2018 classics. And from my numbers, those are all the ones that he could have qualified for as an Elite Series angler. He's made every classic when he's competed as an elite, which is particularly impressive. There's guys with long careers that have breaks in there and so forth.
Well, I'm pretty fortunate that it's worked out that way. You know, maybe I just haven't done it long enough, but, you know, I have been fortunate to slide in there. There was a couple of tight ones and, you know, a couple of them that I've really needed to to finish well, and so I've been real fortunate that it's worked out.
Yeah, you got to take some of the credit for that too. So out of those 74 tournaments, Bassmaster tournaments, Clifford has been in the money 53 times. All right. That's a 71% in the money ratio.
That's pretty good.
You think of anybody? I mean, we've had a couple of guys that have been around for 2 years that are maybe higher than that, but that's not fair. So that's an incredible percentage, 71% in the money.
Well, you know, and like I said, I feel fortunate because I had a lot of experience coming over here.
Right.
Some of my misses in the money really probably happened like 15 years ago or so in the opens. But I had quite a while fishing out west full time, and then, you know, fishing the FLW side for 6 or 7 years. So it might be a little bit skewed because I had quite a bit of experience coming.
He's no spring chicken is what he's getting at.
Well, he's to me, he still is. All right, so continuing on down your numbers, you've had 3 second-place finishes, 2015 at Havasu, 2012 Southern Open on the Harris Chain down in Florida, and 2013 Western Open at Havasu. That sound right?
Yeah, you know, that Western Open is probably a little further back because I don't think we had
it. It was 2003.
Yeah, that's it.
So one third place finish, that was this year, 2018 at Oahe. And, boy, I remember Clifford being one of the amazing stories of that tournament where he started out, had a tough day one, and I want you to tell us a little bit more about that, and then really rose like a bullet the rest of the way.
Found the winning fish, arguably.
Right, and finished third.
Yeah, you know, you rarely get to have that opportunity. I feel really bad about that one because you just don't get to find a group of fish that really holds on to win like that. You know, in the past, in the tournaments that I've won in the past, in other places, you know, you really had to morph from one thing into another, you know, to make something work for 4 days, and it was some kind of transitional deal. This thing at Oahe was like just a flat-out gold mine, and I just messed up the first day, really, is the bottom line. And
what did you weigh in on that first day?
Oh, I think I had, like, something, maybe 7 pounds or
okay.
something. I really didn't even need a good day. I just needed a kind of an average day, sadly.
Right.
But just made some mistakes and lost a few fish and had a couple of little malfunctions that just didn't go well.
It was bad weather, and you forgot your seat.
Yeah, I forgot my butt
There's
seat.
A lot
oh,
of
that's right.
Kicking
okay.
himself about
it was the first
when he came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it was rough.
Day. Event of the yeah. season where we really, you mm-hmm. know, had potential for any kind of, you know, rough water, really, to be
right.
honest.
And that lake's known for having rough water.
It, you know, that's,
oh,
that's
yeah.
what I saw there. You know, a thunderstorm comes in, and it's not 20 to 30 mile an hour wind. It's 50 to 60, you know. So it was a whole new ball game. And that's part of what scared me, too, is we'd had 2 thunderstorms previously in the week where, you know, it could likely kill someone out there,
mm-hmm.
you know. So when it kicked up and I saw it coming, you know, the waves got really bad and where I couldn't hold, but I also felt like, you know what, there's a real likely chance if this does what the previous 2 storms did, then I won't make it in. So
right.
I decided to bail you know, really wished I hadn't because I got back towards the weigh-in part of the lake and the thing blew over and it really wasn't nearly as bad as the previous ones. I mean, it got bad, but it was short term and,
right.
and less. But
you know, we've talked several times about the Oahe tournament recently and those storms that blew through, and there was some bangers. I mean,
oh, it was unbelievable.
Right.
We watched roofs, you know, I mean, try to lift off. We
yep.
we had holes in the walls that are at the cabins we were staying in, and I mean,
were you there
trees,
for that?
I was
yeah.
there.
Oh boy,
trees breaking down, and we're thinking. I mean, that tree, it didn't just
yeah.
show up
Been there
this
a while.
Week. You know what I mean? It's and so I don't understand. You know.
Well, and you kind of got to commit on that lake. It's so big. If you're going one way, you know, you aren't going to have a whole lot of extra time during the day to make a decision to go to another end of the lake.
Right.
So I mean, it's. tremendous. It's funny. You see where you're going for like 20 minutes, and you're still not there, and then you keep going, and it looks like it's going to be here soon. But
right.
So that's a commitment. But your spot was – I was with you on that last day, I believe, taking pictures, and they were stacked on there. And you felt like that would have held up for the 4 days had you started there on the first day?
No, absolutely. It just – really, I just barely had scratched the surface, and I kind of – you know, after catching them on day two, I thought, well, I don't really know how many's here or how many's coming. And so I knew I had enough to get to day three, and I thought, well, heck, I don't want to burn them up because it's really not a high-weight tournament. It was one of those things, you know, if it had been St. Clair or Champlain, well, you're totally out of it if you have a low day. You're right. Out of it. You cannot catch up. There's just no way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't catch a 35-pound bag, you know, and that's what it would take. But there, the weights were spread out enough that, you know, I felt like if I managed them, I might actually be able to salvage a decent tournament, you know, sneak back to the 50 cut, sneak back to 30 or 25 or something. And I really wish I would have tried to squeeze out another pound and a half, you know, on day two and day three.
Right, right.
Because that's really all it would have taken.
Where did you start day four? What position were you in?
Day four, I'm thinking I was sixth.
Oh, you were that high.
I was going to sixth.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
you moved up three places.
Yeah, I think I was. I mean, I started in 87th the first day, and then I was, you know, broke into that top 50. I had about 19 or something.
That's a big climb.
That is. And, it was an epic climb. So a few other highlights for you. You've had 9 top 10 finishes. Some highlights of those: 2017 at Mille Lacs, you finished third. 2015 at the California Delta, finished 7th. 2013 at St. Lawrence, finished 4th. And also in 2013 at La Crosse, finished 8th. So some really good tournaments in there. You've had 23 top 20s and 34 top 30s. All that totals up to over $600,000 in tournament earnings. A very nice 6-year deal, or 6 years on the elites, but you had some opens in there too. So really a success story at this point. Let's look at 2018 specifically. 2018, you started out at Lake Martin, making a check, finished 45th. Move on to the Classic, finished 13th at Lake Hartwell.
Haven't you finished 13th at Lake Hartwell before?
Yeah.
That's right.
Good memory.
I remember we did the fantasy podcast about that, and I seem to recall that number being, maybe there was another 13th Classic finish too. I have to go look, but I feel like there's some weird 13 numbers going on there.
Yeah, it'd be nice to move beyond that.
He's got 2 13s in the Classic, 2018 and 2015. Was 2015 Hartwell?
I think probably so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was. So 2 13th place finishes.
You need to get on top of Lake Hartwell this year. Maybe win that sucker.
A couple more ounces and you're in the top 12. Move on to Grand Lake, a strong finish there at 19th place. Go to Kentucky Lake and finish 90th there.
Yeah, that was, that was heartbreaking because I broke a pretty good streak. I really had a long streak going prior to that one, getting checks. I'll be honest, Kentucky Lake is the thorn in my side of my career. It really has been. I can't explain why, because I've done well in both offshore and shallow deals. I really can't understand it. It's like I've got a little bit of a Kentucky Lake curse. I won one on Chickamauga one time, so I'm like, well, I can catch them okay on Tennessee River. And this year we were going early, where I was like, hey, this is going to be all right. It just didn't work out. I can't even really explain why, other than it was just, maybe bad timing on some of the places I hit, because I've found great places where guys do really well on Kentucky Lake about every time I've been, and go the wrong place day one and day two, and if I'd flip-flop them, maybe I'd do all right, but that one hurts, because for some reason Kentucky Lake has been a real stumper my whole career.
Bet you'll have another opportunity.
Well, that's the thing, it's a regular place. what I should do is just go live there for a couple of months and try to get something off my back. You know what I mean? Try to get past that.
Get to be real close friends with Mark Menendez.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously there's lots of people have lots of experience on Kentucky Lake. It's just a regular for tour events and elite events and you know whatever event you're in. It's Kentucky Lake's a big one. You know, mm-hmm. it's historically mm-hmm. a major tournament player. So. Definitely one I should try to figure out how to turn the corner on. It's
well, you rebounded quickly after that. We went to Lake Travis in Texas, and you made a top 12, finished 12th in that deal.
Yeah, you know, that place set up real desert southwest.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really it's almost dissimilar to a lot of that part of Texas because it's more like a Falcon or Amstead, you know, the way it has rock and wood and you know, kind of that reservoir steep, you know, bank canyon wall type stuff. So it was right at home for me, and didn't really catch him the way I expected to catch him. I expected to catch him how the winners, you know, Drew and some of those other guys caught him, and my deal doing that really kind of petered out. I don't know if the shad moved out of my area, but I had to kind of back off and figure out a little. Like a bluegill spawn deal, and found some bass, basically sight fishing most of them, and you know, caught them in real finesse stuff, you know, which is not really how I'd planned on fishing it. But fortunately, like I said, it was real familiar type of deal for me for the Southwest, so it you know, I was pretty comfortable going a lot of different ways on that one.
What was your big fish at that tournament?
I did have big fish one day, 7 pounds, I think, something, you know, day two or day three.
Okay, I seem to remember that.
I got to get one of the big ones. It just, you know, that's the one where you want the big kahuna.
Right.
It was a truck.
Right,
you
exactly.
Know, it was a truck for the win on that one, so.
So we go down to Sabine River next. You finished 56 there. Is that your third elite tournament at Sabine?
Yeah, and I did okay the second time we went. And, you know, the other two times it was like one bite from doing good and
right.
one bite from doing really bad. You
yeah.
know, it was just a tricky deal.
Well, still respectable. Then you go up to La Crosse, finish 15th at La Crosse, have a strong tournament there.
That's a fun place to fish. I've enjoyed it, you know, both times. I think we've been there two or three times, and that's I really enjoyed that.
Then we go to Owyhee. We've talked about that. You finished third place there. And then up to St. Lawrence and a 92nd at St. Lawrence. We've had some guys, it's been interesting, who thought they would do well there and struggled.
That fits you well, I would think.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously I was really disappointed. That was one where I planned on doing good. I'd done good every time we've been there.
Yeah.
You know, that was just sometimes there's things I can't explain in fishing, honestly, and you know, I mean, it's like I think of Jason Christie at Grand Lake.
You right.
know, that, you know, he certainly didn't plan on having a bad tournament, you know, and sometimes there's just some things you can't explain. And
yeah,
I just flat didn't do good is, all, you know, the bottom line.
Finished off the year at the AOI Championship at Chattoog, and uncharacteristically, Clifford hit a 50th place there. That, of course, there were 50 anglers in that tournament. How'd that one line up for you?
Well, again, you know, I don't know what was going on, you know, between the St. Lawrence and Chattoog, but, you know, obviously not how I'd intended or planned on it. Fortunately, I had really good points going in, so
yeah.
I was way up there, and it really wasn't a big deal points-wise, but, you know, nobody likes to slip or lose
right.
money either. You know, I was planning on doing good and expected to have a good tournament, and just didn't, just flat didn't, and... you know, there's sometimes, like I said, with the St. Lawrence River, there's sometimes where you're like, well, I made this mistake and that
right.
mistake. And there's sometimes where you go, you know what? I just really don't know what I did wrong.
It didn't work.
I may have just gone around the corner, you know,
right.
behind Chris Lane or you know what I mean? I just felt like there were some things that, you know, what do? You just try again.
Right, right. So. You keep fighting back. So despite that, you still finished 28th in AOI points, mm-hmm. and you'll be going into your sixth straight classic, so you continue that streak. It's been interesting to look. I suspect he's got the longest active streak of a current elite angler.
For the classic.
For the classic. All right, think about that.
Hmm. Just no more 13th place finishes.
Well, that's the goal is to move past that for sure.
How do you feel like the Classic in Knoxville sets up for you?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I feel like I have been there. I have fished two or three tournaments on Fort Loudoun, and so I know what type of lake it is, and I wouldn't say I'm familiar with it at all, but I do kind of know a little bit about what to expect. So,
right.
You know, we'll see. We'll see.
Teleco is an interesting part of that for you. I'm just thinking about more of a smallmouth area, a little more clear water.
Yeah, it definitely has some clearer water, and it's got some good fish on that side. I've fished both sides of that thing, it's probably a little less stable as far as being able to ride something out there, but it definitely has it has potential for some good fish for sure. So, you know, I don't know which lake I'll be fishing on. Obviously we get a pretty good practice there to kind of, you know, sift through what's going on and what lake or what areas are going to be key. But, I like it. I don't really know what to think about it. You know, Tennessee, that time in March can be real nice, and it can be bitter cold still.
So
there's just so many different phases that it could go from one to the other. It's really a real coin toss as far as what's going to be going on.
So your AOI track record is really strong. First year on the Elites, 2013, you finished 30th. 2014 finishes 36th. 2015, you finished 20th. 2016, 36th. 2017, your high water mark so far, finished 19th. And 2018, you finished 28th. And so your average for 6 years of competing for Angler of the Year, your average finish is 28.
That's one of the best we've had in a long time.
Yeah, that's really strong. That said, you know, I want everybody to know that just fishing the Elites, not the beginning of Clifford Perch's professional career. He started fishing full time really at 18. You were in college, I believe, at that time, but you were fishing opens and other things.
Yeah, you know, I fished a lot of unaffiliated, just Western stuff and Southwestern stuff, team tournaments every weekend all through college. And, I started doing it pretty much full time, you know, right out of college. I had a wildland fire job that was just kind of a good 20-something-year-old kid job for summer, you know, it was good money, and I was still able to fish a lot, so I did that for 6 or 7 summers, and after that I started guiding and fishing tournaments full time mainly. So
really 25 years of a fishing career, so your adult life basically.
Yeah, it's
as a professional angler.
It kind of been different parts of the country, but yeah, I've been, you know, I feel like I've been doing it quite a while.
Yeah. So going back in his history just a little bit, the first Bassmaster tournament was a Washington Western Open, is what I'm showing, on Columbia River, 75th place or 76th place finish for that one. You remember that tournament still?
I do. I remember going there, and you know, you're pretty clueless back then, and I started out, I think I was like one of the highest guys in Arizona. I had a decent first day. And, you know, heck, I didn't have a clue what we were doing back then. But that was when drop shotting was just coming out of, you know, California and Japan. And I was familiar with that a little bit. And just being real green and not really knowing how to go from a one-day tournament fisherman to multi-day deal was probably a big part of that. But I do remember it a little bit. I remember stumbling through a few of those opens, you know, in the beginning. There was quite a few of them like that. And really, you know, just moving from fishing the desert southwest to other parts of the west was, you know, it was a little tricky for me.
Yeah,
in the beginning.
Doubt.
I had a couple of good ones here and there, but in general, I missed, you know, I had some real strikeouts for sure.
I think I remember we had to drive down like 2 or 3 hours. You had boat trouble.
Well, I hit a I hit a pile of rocks. Basically, I had an offshore reef and knocked my lower unit off. And,
good.
So yeah, my dad was actually up there, and he was able to take me after the tournament. We went down and borrowed a boat from somebody. It was a long ways away, and the gentleman was nice enough to. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So got us through, but. Didn't get a check out of it.
Well, a couple other highlights in your career. You had a second, well, I guess we touched on that, a second at a Western Open at Havasu, 2003. You're a three-time U.S. Open winner, which is really solid. Strong competition in that thing and great prize money. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the Clifford Perch legend is winning those tournaments and really establishing himself as a strong angler and a really strong Western angler who then began to expand into the rest of the country.
Yeah, that U.S. Open's been a real good thing for me. Obviously, you know, to be able to win a few times and I was close to winning several other times, it's been a real good deal for us. And, you know, out west, that's a premier deal.
Right.
So, you know, it's got a lot of history. It's an ancient tournament. I mean, mm-hmm. it's back in the Roland Martin days and you know, I mean, Gary Yamamoto and Gary Klein and, you know, all those guys, really a lot of them started there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was their major win to begin with and things like that. So it's a neat Western event and it's been a good one for me, fortunately.
Is that always on the same lake?
Yeah, it's always been at Lake Mead. Lake Mead. You know, they talk about changing it every now and then they're just like, it's just too legendary to change. You know,
right.
Lake Mead is a really neat tournament lake because it's so big and so vast and so it's unforgiving and there's a lot of elements that make Lake Mead the perfect place for a mm-hmm. big tournament. So
you also have two FLW wins. And so, really, it stacks up to a fantastic career, I believe, at this point. I want to ask you just two things about that you touched on, and I remember this from a previous story we did on you. You went to college. You were majoring in zoology, is what I show, and were pretty far along in it, and decided just to stop and fish. You were gonna go fishing.
How met me.
Okay, in college?
Yes, okay. We were both zoology majors, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So were you both going to work at zoos? Is that what you
I
do?
I wanted to be a veterinarian.
Ah,
so
okay.
That was the career plan.
Did you finish, though?
I graduated.
And you did not?
No, I had enough of it.
I didn't graduate college either. It's overrated.
Yeah, well, it's funny.
I'm not supposed to say that with my boss in here.
If it works for you, it's good.
Yeah, I had an interesting deal that my microbiology professor at NAU kind of laughed me out of his office because he said, well, you'll never make it.
You told him you wanted to be a professional angler.
He asked what I was going to do with my life, and I said, well, you know, I'm trying to do that, and he said, well, that's a laugh, you'll never make it, and in the real world, you know, this and blah, 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 and I, you know, kind of...
Who's laughing now?
Kind of funny, yep. Because...
here you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I guess it's worked out, I guess, you know.
It'd be nice to run into him again.
Well, it'd be kind of funny, for sure.
Professor Shand.
Yeah, he was a rough one, yep. Man. He was a real... A lot of folks didn't really like him that much, but...
So you mentioned that you did wildlife or wildlands firefighting as a summer job kind of thing, and certainly with the fires in the West in the last decade or so, that's been a hot topic. What was that experience like?
Well, you know, I got to see a lot of the country and a lot of wild country. It was a fun job for a 20-year-old, you know, it was interesting. You know, we basically, it was called an initial attack crew. We had a helicopter, and we got to rappel out on mountains in the middle of nowhere to, you know, fight
That's
a fire.
Pretty cool.
So pretty unique job, and you know, we had a lot of fun, and you know, like I said, for a college kid, it was perfect summer deal, you know, for a few years there. So, you know, it was And it was pretty common. Western
right.
guys, a lot of friends grew up doing that, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had lots of buddies that did that after high school for a while.
Okay, very good.
And you could repel in on an elk one of these times.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah,
get back
well,
to the
I
oil.
I got to see some of that elk country for
I
sure.
Bet.
As a, you know,
so you have worked as an elk guide, as a fishing guide. Do you still do much of that?
I do a little bit, yeah. You know, we just got done with a couple of hunts the last couple of weeks and do a little bit of elk guiding in the off season and obviously some fishing guiding when I can fit it in because, yeah, you know, anytime I'm home and we got pretty darn good fishing where I live and it's just a good place to be able to get people to catch fish and have a good time. So it's not a real hard thing to do when you're, you know, fishing is your life.
So. Right, right. So professional anglers coming out of Arizona, in some ways, for those of us in the East, kind of goes against stereotype. Yet I counted it up for the 2018 season. There were five or six professional anglers on the Elite Series from Arizona. I counted John Murray mm-hmm. in that group.
Yeah.
Why is it such a good place to cut your teeth and then become successful in the professional world?
You know, I'm really not even sure what the answer is on that because you look at lots of places around the country, you know, and, you know, say California, for instance. They've got a lot of variety. Lots of great fishermen come out of there. Arizona kind of does the same thing. You know, we fish a lot of our Arizona waters and California waters, you know, starting out. And so maybe it's some of that variety. But, you know, you get that in lots of places. So I don't know other than... you know, maybe good fishing, I think, in general is something that gets a lot of guys into it because, you know, let's face it, if it's not fun when you're starting out or you're trying it out, you know, it's hard to get into something. So, you know, I don't really know what the answer is on that, but obviously there's some great fishermen from Arizona. You know, I think of John Murray, you know, was kind of one of the pioneers, and even prior to him, you know, Greg Hines and you know, guys way back, Gary Yamamoto spent a lot of time in Arizona, and you know, I've got buddies. Mark Kyle fished the top 150s. He would have been a world beater. You know, I mean, he would be a legit superstar if he wanted to do it for very long, but he gets bored of things quick. And, you know, some of my roommates recently, Josh Bertrand and Roy Hawk, you know,
right.
phenomenal
right.
fishermen. And so, you
yeah,
know,
Roy,
lots of
Roy
Dean,
came
Dean
in
Rojas and
with a bang and did, you know, a couple of second place finishes to start the year mm-hmm. in 2018.
And Roy's a really good cold water angler. He, you know, that's really a time of year where he shines extra
mm-hmm.
well, you know, so those first couple events really lined up well for him. And he's really a good cold water, hard bait guy. So.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Well, let's get back into your history, and I want to start with Alicia. This is you brought up a topic here about your college professor laughing in your face, and I think that it's easy as a significant other to want to support and you know see that through together. But I guess when the time came for Clifford to jump, mm-hmm. that's a probably a stressful decision. And it's something that really takes, you know, a team to make happen in the long run. What were your thoughts when that was on the table?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't know that it was honestly an option. It was – I kind of knew what I was getting into when mm-hmm. When I first started dating Clifford. I think it was probably our second or third date. He said, "You want to go out in the lake with me?" And I'm all, "Oh, yeah, this is cool," because I hadn't got to date a whole lot of guys that enjoyed the outdoors. And where I grew up, I loved hiking and being mm-hmm. out doing things. So I was like, "Oh, this is really cool, okay." So we go, and it's dark, 30 in the morning, and I'm like, "All right, you know, this is all right." And we're out in the lake, and he's got Dr. Pepper and Doritos in the boat. And the day keeps going on and on. And we fished till dark with
oh
Dr.
Boy.
Pepper and Doritos in the boat. And I was like, "Oh, man, what's this all about? I don't get this." And he didn't talk to me at all. Like, I just sat in the back of the
That's
boat.
That's hilarious.
But then we started fishing. Before we got married, we started fishing couples tournaments together. And I kind of caught the bug a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed doing it with him. Like, it was fun to go out in the lake. And I kind of taught him a little bit better about drinking water throughout the day and maybe having some protein in the boat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you got to pack the boat for your passengers, too.
I mean, yeah,
he's better about it now. Yeah, but so.
You kind of knew it was coming.
I did. Yeah. So.
Well, it definitely takes a team, and we want to hear more about that. And one of the questions I've been dying to talk to you about and ask you is, I'm a self-professed shed fanatic, and I love picking up antlers. I've got a collection. It's important to me. My father-in-law, this is a little side note to tell you how much I love him, is a likes to make pens and shoehorns and goofy little things that, you know, just he's a hobby carpenter.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's always wanted to take some of my horns and turn them into these trinkets, and I have adamantly been against that, to the point where I've had friends give him their sheds because they felt bad that I wouldn't give him any of mine. But you had told me once that you picked up antlers to sell them to help pay for entry fees or something of that version, and I want to hear about that.
Yeah, you know, I bought my first truck basically with antler money, and a lot of my first boat, you know, between fire money and antler money. So, you know, starting at about 13 or 14, it was, you know, it really, that's about when it came out that there was somebody going to buy those things. So,
right.
You know, elk antlers were plentiful where I lived, and it was right up my alley. I really, you know, loved hiking and finding them.
I might like to buy some from you.
Yeah, I really had a blast doing that for a long time and, you know, made quite a bit of money. So it was a neat deal, and it's a perfect way for me to, I learned all the little sweet spots, and I mean, I covered acres and acres and thousands of acres, and you know, you find all the neat little honey holes to find elk and hunt in, too. So, you know, a lot came out of that, and I still love doing it. My dad gets to do it quite a bit when I'm gone because fishing season is prime time, you know, that March, April time mm-hmm. frame is pretty busy in the fishing world. So I don't get to go, you know, during the prime time, but I still, you know, find some in the off season in the rough places where they don't get picked up.
What's your collection like now?
Well, you know, I did start saving some, you know, a while back because I realized that, you know, that $100 bill comes and goes, but every now and then there's an elk antler that you just may never see one like that again. So
yeah.
I definitely have saved some. I've got a few neat stories that I, you know, how I found them and had been watching the elk and stuff like that. And so I definitely have, I've got a dozen or so that I've saved. And, you know, there were some as a kid starting out that I can't believe we sold. If I had now, you know, back then it was a, you know, a big elk was a nice 6-point. And, you know, we didn't really do numbers, but, you know, we found a couple of sheds back then that were close to 400 bulls, and that's, you know, that's those are like 16, 18-pound bass, you know. And,
yeah.
And they, you know, I'm just like, man, I really kind of wish we would have kept them.
Man, my gut hurts you tell me that.
That's... Yeah, but I did start saving, you know, some of the neat ones, and you know, more recently, so I do have about a dozen of them with, you know, big ones that are neat stories and big horns for sure.
Do you like the decor in your house with antlers? Does that help at all?
Yeah, actually, we kind of built our house around being able to put some of his trophy elk that are up on the wall and deer up on the wall.
I like that.
And then we also use sheds above the cabinet as part of the decor, and we've kept some neat ones. My daughter and I both found a set in the same day of a really big one.
Hmm.
So we're trying to figure out with some barn wood, try to figure out how to display that, and we have a picture of it. So it's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah. That's see, it's a lifestyle. It's the way you do things.
Yeah.
So when you were getting into this, I'm sure Jim probably has these numbers here, but getting into the Elite Series, you had to go through the opens. How many years did it take, or was it your first try?
Well, fortunately, it was our first try, and like I said, I had some experience going in, so, you know, it was good timing, and I did real well on a couple of, I did the Southern and the Northern, and did real well on both, fortunately.
So did you qualify on both ends?
I think so. Yeah, it was, like I said, it went pretty well, and you know, in a short season like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think it was only about three events involved
yeah.
in each. So,
that's right.
you know, it's got to go well. You know, even no matter how good you are, you can throw a real stinker in there. And so,
yeah.
You know, it fortunately it did work out because, you know, you can do good all you want, but you're still going to have a bad one every now and then. So, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, through those opens.
And your daughters are in their teens, and I know that's probably a pretty tough time to travel. You know, you can't just pick them up and head down the road like you can an infant. What's your dynamic at home? And obviously, Clifford's on the road. You're holding the fort down, but how does that work with the two of you?
Well, we've done everything that there is to do. To be honest, mm-hmm. We've tried it all and done it all. We started out everybody going, and that, you know, as the girls got older, they've got their own lives, and really it doesn't work that way anymore. And quite honestly, teenagers don't care for dad that much, especially teenage girls. You know, they do things differently. But they traveled for about the first 10 years. You know, we started out in a tiny little pop-up camper, and then a fifth wheel, and a bigger fifth wheel, and triple towing, and then a motorhome, and a double stack trailer, and then pretty soon was motels, and then renting houses, and then out of the RV world. So we've kind of morphed from one end to the other, and you know, as the girls get older, you know, Alicia might go again eventually, but you know, we've tried it all. Sometimes it's been messy, and mm-hmm. you know, it's not all pretty, and it's you know, we've had some real some real up and down things about it, and you know, definitely not smooth, but I think that's just kind of life.
Yeah, I think overall the girls, you know, they grew up on the road bass fishing. I homeschooled them for a while, and you know, it was a neat lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think they'll ever forget that.
Yeah,
it's just they're at an age right now where they can't appreciate it as much. It's more about the boys and the sports and mm-hmm. the whatever's going on in their social life. So
have their own life developing. That's totally understandable. Yep. But hey, they'll come back. You know, they'll you'll be their favorite again one day. I don't know. Those days are ahead of me, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah. Fortunately, they're like my wife, so my kids are pretty normal. Had they be like me, I'd be in big trouble. So are you a Bass Track follower?
I do. I do watch the Bass Track. You know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know if it's right or not. I'm always hoping it's not when I don't see him doing well. But
yeah.
But, well, yeah, I do follow it when he's fishing.
It's risky business.
I get online and try to watch and... Yeah, I get sucked in. I'll be on that, you know, now that they have the live broadcast and you can watch it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
You get sucked in sometimes, and I have to step away from it because, yeah. I mean, I still get all excited and mm-hmm. anxious, and all those flutters come around, but yeah.
Are you honest with Bass Track, Cliff, or do you kind of fudge a little bit?
Well, let me tell you how Bass Track works. The whole field... Now, if I was honest, here, and this is part of, like, who's watching, you know, on Bass Track, like, she's watching. So if I was honest, I would end up 25th, say, on Bass Track, but when I got to weigh in, I would be about 45th or 50th.
Right.
Because that's just how it runs, you know. So if you're not a pound and a half, you know, depending on the type of fishery. Now, if we're just totally smashing them, you better be 2 pounds
mm-hmm.
or so, 2.5 shy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not a pound and a half shy, you're going to come in, you know, way higher on Bass Track than you actually are in the real world. So I have to be careful of that.
Everybody.
I know his method now. And, because usually I'll see what he is on Bass Track, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to add 1.5 pounds to that, and then he's here, and I'm already figuring it out.
And
yeah.
Most of my friends are, you know, that follow it are kind of know that. But, you know, you also occasionally get a marshal that really kind of does his own direction on it, you know?
And, no, you that's know, really a 4-pounder.
You find out that, you know, the 2.5 you caught this morning, they both went in as 3.5s and 4-pounders, and you're like, whoa, 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 man.
Yeah.
That is certainly a dynamic. You know? We've been asking that question recently, and we all know that, you know, you guys sandbag a little bit. You have to. I get that. But to have a marshal kind of take control, and if he knows that you're fudging it a little bit and makes that switch, I guess it is what it is.
Yeah,
but,
you know, and some of them try to keep it dead on, but occasionally you'll get one that just flat thinks you caught a 25-pound bag when you caught 17. You know, and you're like, no.
Hey, I fished with guys like that. I understand that.
I'm like, you got to understand.
Clifford, there's a part of your background that maybe a lot of fans don't know, and I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it, but you have dealt with multiple sclerosis.
Yeah,
which makes your story even more phenomenal.
Well, and I think everybody kind of has things that, you know, some hang up or another, and like I was saying earlier, our life is, you could characterize it as messy occasionally. You know, it's, you know, things are not always easy, and you know, the MS deal kind of has derailed me a few times, and it's just, fortunately, I feel like, you know, in my situation, I'm still functioning well in general at a high level. Now, there's been years and times where it didn't go well. I think, you know, mm-hmm. my oldest daughter, you know, 1 year fishing, she had kidney cancer.
Wow.
And I think I won like $5,000 that year, and that doesn't work very well in the fishing world. You know, there's just things that, you know, in life that come along and makes it hard to perform at the top level. So really, I feel like I'm pretty fortunate because, things are working well, you know, on my body right now. And there was a time I lost my vision in my left eye. And, you know, you don't cast very well. You can't even catch a ball when you can't see with both eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things. And I had a number of other little things go wrong. But I really feel fortunate because right now things are operating. So.
Good.
You know, could be way, way, way worse.
When did you first learn you had it?
Well, it was an interesting deal. It was involving fishing because I was saying earlier that we had some unaffiliated events out west. There was a big, big team circuit when I started out called All-Star Circuit. And, you know, it's a big team deal. And it was back before the internet days where you wait for the printout to get sent to you to see where you're at in the points, you know. And after fishing that, you know, four or five years, my buddy and I were leading the points. And so we were going into this last event, and we ended up winning the points race. And that was a big deal to us back then. You know, it's not much now, but it back then that was a big deal because it was the big thing going on. And at the winning or the awards ceremony, the awards meeting, I can remember standing there kind of waiting, and I lost my balance. Just standing still, you know, just standing still, kind of about fell over twice. And, I mean, I'm not drinking or anything like that.
Yeah. You know? I thought he just didn't drink water.
Yeah.
He's dehydrated.
Something was haywire, and I went back up the hill, you know, home that afternoon, took a nap. And when I woke up, and you know how fishing a – you know, long tournament in this, you know, in June, a long day tournament, you're beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, well, I took a nap, but when I woke up, I couldn't get up. It was a weird thing because I couldn't see, and I really couldn't see out of both eyes. It was, you know, things had gone black and I had no balance. And so
vertigo.
I couldn't not only see, but I couldn't really stand right either, you know, and that deal kind of lasted for a while. It kind of shot up my summer and,
went to all kinds of doctor's appointments.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
they
were all kinds of spinal taps, just everything.
Stuff really went haywire, you know.
Yeah.
You got no idea what's going on. And you know, I was pretty cocky as a 22-year-old. You know, I felt pretty good about, you know, growing up as a wrestler and a tough one and cross-country runner and, you know, in the wildland fire deal. You know, we competed running and I mean... honestly, a real cocky little 22-year-old.
Yeah.
And it got my attention. Shows how fragile we are and certainly kind of got straightened me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we can, you know, things can go away in a heartbeat and I saw that. So fortunately, you know, getting my diet right and just kind of getting back straightened out a little bit, you know, a lot of those things went away but they're always a little bit of they're there enough to warn me, you know, and remind me that it's dangerous if I'm not
Especially extreme stress, really, or extreme fatigue, it seems like, or heat. It all becomes a combination, it seems to really...
Do you stay in touch with him on that stuff to help remind him, or...
Yeah, I mean, I used to kind of cook a lot. I mean, I just always made sure he had all kinds of stuff and you know, used to juice a lot. Just did a lot of different things to try to make sure nutritionally he stays well. And you know, the stress sometimes you can't help it. I mean, fishing is fishing sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, when we're...
A lot of stress.
That's our primary income. So it does get stressful. And you know, I remember when our daughter did have cancer, it was 2 years, 2 seasons for him that was really, really difficult, financially and emotionally, you know. So, and I didn't travel for a year and a half of it because I had to stay home.
Right.
Through her chemo and stuff. So, yeah, definitely had the run of it, but through, I think, just a lot of faith, we've been able to stick with it, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
It's something we definitely... We definitely spend a lot of time in the morning in prayer and trying to just, you know, ask God that we'd be provided for. And so far, it's been well.
I think one thing you said, Clifford, that I relate to, I do think everybody's dealing with something.
Yeah.
Some kind, you know, you live long enough and you're going to have some kind of physical issue. We're not made perfectly. And so, you know, a lot of times you have one of those scares early and it causes you to live a healthier lifestyle and to get close to God and those kind of things. And so bless you both.
Yeah. What a story of overcoming.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome. I can't imagine the hurdles that you have to mentally get over when you're in a bass tournament. I mean, we've talked a lot with a lot of different anglers about the mental aspect of what it is you're doing on the water and being out there covering the events. I can kind of relate to what you have to do, but fishing is very largely mental. And obviously you have to get yourself right when you get on that boat every morning. What's something you do? What are some daily habits you kind of go through to keep yourself in line and healthy for that matter?
Oh man. Well, I guess, well, that'd be a hard one to pin down, but I do, you know, like Alicia said, start my day out, you know, in a little time of reading and prayer, and physically I make a smoothie every morning, you know.
We actually go out berry picking. We get blackberries in the summer and
Love
get
that.
our own stuff. And
wow.
Kind of learned through a few people that have MS, you know, some of the diets that they've, you know, put together that have caused people to, you know, function a lot better. And so, you know, had to kind of incorporate some of that. Obviously, you know, on the water, you know, just keeping your body fueled up with good fuel, plenty of water, juice, stuff like that. I was a diehard Dr. Pepper guy, you know, in my 20s, and I don't even drink soda anymore, so it's kind of funny how you had to change some things in order to be effective, you know, in tournament fishing, or, you know, physically able to kind of manage it. It doesn't sound like it would be that hard to just go fishing, but I've noticed some people that don't do it regularly. If they ever fish a multi-day tournament, they're like, "That's the hardest thing I've ever done. I had no idea."
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. I mean, you got practice days and then competition days, and you fish all 4 days of competition. That's a brutal, brutal week.
6 or 7 days, you know, daylight to dark, and
wind,
your body is
rain
trash,
and everything else.
It's a unique thing, but you know, I guess you know, I've done it long enough to where I've learned some little tricks to survive it, you know, health-wise, body-wise, you know, food, all that stuff, so.
Hair-wise, hair looks great all the time.
Yeah, that was my idea.
Can't take any credit for that.
Nice.
I used to buzz cut it when we first got married.
Hey, at least at your age, you still have it.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Yeah, I admire it.
Well, I'm heading down the same path as Jim Sexton. Well, this is a great story, Clifford and Alicia. I think we could probably talk some of your experiences for hours, and we're going to have to get into more of that sometime down the road. But when we wrap these up, we like to talk a little bit about the next generation, the future of the sport. You're a veteran angler. There's no question about it. You've been around this game most of your life, and you as well, Alicia. I would like you both to offer some advice, you maybe to a new incoming angler, and Alicia maybe to a young family getting involved in the sport. Start with you, Clifford. How do you direct somebody that comes to you and says, I've got the dream to do the same thing? What do you say to them?
Well, it's amazing now, the opportunities available for young guys. You know, I look at the Jordan Lees and the you know, even my buddy Josh Bertrand and James Elam stay with me. You know, they're 10 years younger than me, or 12 or 14 years. And, you know, just the things that they know coming in. You know, there's so much more information available now. You know, I mentioned Jordan. Look at the college and high school programs that are out there now. I kind of laughed because I got in trouble in college for going fishing in high school. And
probably would have saved me a lot of trouble, too, if it was there.
If I would have been on a team or actually, you know, one of these. I mean, they actually have scholarships for that stuff now. So it's a whole different world. So there's lots of ways to be involved and learn at a lightning-fast rate. You know, we used to have to learn by trial and error, and it was painful when you were wrong. And now a guy can basically know just about everything there is to know about seasonal patterns, lures available, tactics, I mean, just what have you. It's all out there. So I guess my advice would be, you know, consume all of that you can, you know, and spend lots of time on the water. That's what I did. I spent tons and tons of time on the water in the outdoors. And fortunately grew up doing that, and that was my big deal. But now you can not only have your own experience, you can learn from so many other people and all the people that are best in their field. So, you know, I would just consume as much of that as you can, honestly. And then we see that. Like I said, a lot of these guys coming in, they know everything in the beginning. You know what I mean? They know it all, and it's the learning curve is way different for sure now.
It's a lot faster.
Oh, it's incredible.
And the competition continues to get better and better and better, and even younger.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously family's critical. You to have – it's obvious it's a big part of your lives, but to keep it together from the beginning until now, you know, we've got young anglers coming in. Some are newly married. Some are not married yet, but that is going to become a factor. Mm-hmm. How do they get through it?
Oh, well, gosh. Like you said, it's messy, but, you know, looking back, I wouldn't change anything that we did. I mean, maybe we didn't need to get as big of a motorhome. I thought that we needed to have it towards the end, but that's okay. You know, we did, like we said, we started out in that little pop-up camper I remember after we had our second Cassidy, she slept in a laundry basket on the sink in the pop-up camper with the other two
awesome.
Between us. I mean, we just made a lot of sacrifices to make it happen, you know. And I didn't have a career at the time. I was, you know, fully supportive of what he was doing. And, I mean, I saw a lot of potential. He did well in what he was doing. And, like I said, we were always provided for very well. In fact, when we had our first child, Kat or Kaylee, I think we were down to $500 in the bank account. And I was due to have her in, like, 2 weeks. And he had two championship tournaments. He had qualified for a team championship, and we had qualified for a couples championship. I couldn't fish the couples, so he had to go do that one by himself. But he won a boat on the couples tournament, and he won a boat on the team tournament a week before I was due to go have this baby. So, I mean, it's like I said, it just kind of all fell into place, and lots of faith. But I wouldn't take back traveling with my kids, and I mean, they learned more. I can't say I was the best teacher, but just being able to go experience everything that they got to experience.
All those locations.
The locations, you know, just we'd gone to Washington, D.C. a couple times and did all those. And it's nice you get a family on the road. A lot of us wives, I can't say as much I do now know as many, but back then I knew all of us and we'd all get together and just do things with our kids and had our own group. And it was just a really neat experience. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess, you know, my thing would be just stick with it through the highs and the lows, because it's worth it. It's not always going to go great, but in the end, it turns out really well.
I love you guys. What a great story. I know, probably makings of a good book here, Clifford. You want to write a book?
Yeah, Greg Bohannon and buddy of mine said, dude, you need to write a book. I was like, oh, gosh. Maybe if I ever win the classic.
Maybe give it a few more years.
Yeah. Hey, you need an editor, give me a call.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you guys coming in. I think that really getting an opportunity to see, learn about the experiences, the lifestyle that's made you who you are is really important to the fans. It's important to what you do, and it's just something. It's been an honor. I've really enjoyed this. It's a good story. We knew it would be.
Yeah.
We knew when you said you're going to be available. I'm like, there's no way we cannot do this. We have to do it. So, hey, from Jim Sexton, from Clifford, and Alicia Perch, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. This is Thomas Allen, and you have been tuning into Inside Bassmaster.